You're listening to Fan of a Fan, an independently produced podcast for stands by stands. I'm Kayla.
And I'm Augie. Welcome back, guys. We're at episode 7. This week is all about fan fiction. We will start the episode with an awesome interview with Jonquilin Hill, who works for NPR's election desk. She'll be talking to us about a piece she did a couple months ago about political fan fiction. We even talk about B2K. I don't know how those two relate, but you'll find out when you listen. And then Kayla and I will be talking about just fan fiction as a whole, which one of us used to write fan fiction for a minute, all that stuff, and of course, per usual, flops and faves. So, are we ready?
We ready.
Lego. We're kicking off this episode with a special guest, my friend. Yes. And co-worker Jonquilin Hill is with us today. Hey, Jonquilin.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So you're here because, one, you're awesome, but also because you wrote a piece earlier this year. Mm-hmm. Was it a couple months ago?
Yeah, it was a few months ago in this very long election cycle.
Yes, and oh my God. So it's all about political fan fiction, and I should mention that you work with the elections desk at NPR, so mm-hmm. you're like knee deep, if not by now, like head deep in like election stuff. So yeah, so welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Welcome. So, you know, we're all familiar with like fan fiction and pop culture. Mm-hmm. So I've read fan fiction with like Beyonce and Jay-Z, right? But what like brought political fan fiction to your attention?
Well, for me, it all started when I realized the way people relate to candidates is very similar to the way they relate to their faves. Mm-hmm. There's very much this attitude in politics where it's like your fave can never.
Yeah.
People go hard for their candidates. They feel really passionately. You know, at Bernie Sanders rallies, it's a lot of the same energy you see at Beyonce concerts. It's mm-hmm. it's coming from the same place. And so I was talking with some editors about writing about that. And also I mentioned fan fiction. And mm-hmm. they said, that sounds really interesting. Because one, it was people who don't really know what fan fiction is.
Right.
I think people around our age, like early 20s, mid 20s, late 20s, we came of age with the internet.
Can we like break down what we know as fan fiction, just general?
Yeah.
Generally.
Me or?
Yeah, you can do it. I think you got this. You're the
expert. So fan fiction is basically when people take a fandom or there's a real person fan fiction and they write stories based on those universes. They can create alternate universes. It can be where we live now. My first introduction to fan fiction was Harry Potter.
Same.
I was very much a huge Harry Potter fan. I would just sort of devour these books. And when they were over, in between books or even after the 7th book came out, I felt like I needed something to tide me over.
Mm-hmm.
So I would find these stories online written about different things, like, say, what if Voldemort did win the Wizard of War? Mm-hmm. What if Hermione and Draco were together? That's a really popular one. You know, what if Ron and Harry were dating? That sort of thing. And I also read a lot of real person fan fiction, too.
Mm-hmm.
I was a B2K stan before stanning was a thing. I went very, very hard for them. And so, you know, I would read these different stories that other teenage girls were writing about them, a lot of them really talented,
mm-hmm.
able to develop these really great plots and sort of pick up personality traits from things they caught on in interviews.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, it was just another way to sort of pass the time and read that thing.
Yeah.
So it was very much, it was not weird because, I don't know, I'm an internet human.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It was just, it was very a normal thing.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting. So with the piece, you spoke to a bunch of people, mm-hmm. including some people who write political fan fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of them that really stood out to me was the writer who you spoke with, who has a 630-word story about how Ted Cruz is being haunted by the ghost of Alexander Hamilton.
Yes.
Which is, like, first of all, amazing because the whole Hamilton boom is so great. Yeah. But can you just talk to us about the writers you spoke with and, you know, what kind of people are they? Like, are they young, old? Like, who is writing this political fan fiction?
So all of the writers I spoke with were women or young women. Mm-hmm. One writer was the same age as me, about 26 years old, and now she works in academia.
Amazing.
And just she started writing fan fiction probably when she was a teenager, probably got into it around the same time that I did. And just she thinks of it sort of as satire, just an opportunity to poke fun at these things, think about the way we interact with our politics, the way politicians interact with each other and go off of that. Another girl that I spoke with, she's a first-time voter, a teenager, getting ready to graduate high school this year. And she was saying how when she feels passionately about something, she starts writing about it. She first got into it with anime and got into some other fandoms. And as a first-time voter, she's very excited. And so this was her opportunity to engage with politics on another level.
And then one other person you mentioned was the GOAT, Beyonce's fave feminist, Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie, who wrote fan fiction, you know, for the New York Times.
Yes.
Technically,
this,
I mean, quote unquote, fan fiction. But
it's this beautiful piece about Melania Trump, just what she imagines a day in the life of Melania Trump. It's her talking to her Pilates instructor and hosting events and interacting with Ivanka Trump. And she is very highbrow. She's well respected. She's a MacArthur genius.
Yes.
And, you know, you can't forget that, like, yes, she has all these accolades, but at the end of the day, that's fan fiction.
Right.
Like, that's what fan fiction is. So whether it's on fanfiction.net or Archive of Our Own or The New Yorker or The New York Times, it's all the same category. It's people expressing the same kinds of ideas.
It's really well put.
So, okay, this is we're getting onto the smut here.
Trigger warning / disclaimer /
when it's fan fiction, there's always like an underlying nasty element.
It's a major theme of fan fiction, like you said, you know, it's always some type of nasty element to it. So did any of that come up in your research? Just, you know, seeing anything written about Obama or Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders? I don't even want to think about Bernie Sanders.
It definitely did. And that was something I had to sort of wade through when I was trying to find links and things to reference. There's an entire website dedicated to sort of this sort of raunchier fan fiction dedicated to Paul Ryan.
An entire site dedicated to Paul Ryan smut.
Yes, an entire website.
An entire one.
An entire Tumblr.
Oh, God.
I remember back in 08, because that's when I first started really not paying attention to politics, but engaging in an active way. Mm-hmm. It was the first time that I watched the news on purpose. It was the first time that, you know, I was checking websites. I was like, what does the New York Times have to say about this? Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was the first election cycle where I could vote. It was a very exciting election cycle because, you know, it was two brand new candidates.
Right.
So there was a lot going on. There was a lot to read up on. And I remember this website that was dedicated to dreams people had about Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton.
No. Wait.
Oh, no.
You mean together?
Together, like
either,
a thing?
Either together or on their own. Like, it was just dedicated because these were two candidates that people felt so passionately about that people were having dreams about this candidate.
Oh my goodness. Like, Billery.
Yes.
Stop.
There was a lot of Billery. Another theme I see in fan fiction regarding, like, Hillary Clinton is set sort of in 1996 and with her reconciling with Bill Clinton, mm-hmm. which is very, it's very interesting. It's very Lemonade.
Oh my God.
There's a lot of, like, Lemonade-like Hillary Clinton fan fiction. It's really, fascinating.
That is interesting. Oh, my God. Okay, so moving on from that. another part of your piece that I found really, really interesting was that You spoke to Amber Davison, who is an assistant professor of communications at Keene State College. Mm-hmm. She told you, she said, we're talking about voters who have a really emotional attachment to candidates. It's the same thing you say when you say you're either a Britney Spears or Christina Aguilera fan, as ridiculous as that sounds. She said, I know that these are two very talented artists, but it doesn't matter. I'm on Team Christina. And so she's basically, she's making that connection, which I found really interesting.
I think much like in pop culture, as in politics, or even much like in politics and pop culture, we've now entered an era where people feel like they can only have one fave, where only one person can be on top.
Mm-hmm.
You see that the way people talk about female pop stars. You see it with, I think, the partisanship in Washington. It's very oriented around your fave can never.
Yeah.
And
I think that's the title of this episode.
Your fave can never. And so there's an emotional investment that you make a lot of the times in politics. And I think a lot of the times we're told politics should be something that is rational, but we're humans and we get excited and we get invested. And our election cycle in America is so long that you sort of begin to form these emotional bonds over these people. You feel happy or saddened by their loss. Like when Mitt Romney lost in 2012, there were so many photographs of people crying.
There's a website dedicated to that, those pictures. I love it. It's hilarious.
And even in 2008, when Obama first ran, I mean, the emotions that people felt.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So it's really similar to the connections you feel to your favorite pop star. And we very much live in an era where we only feel like one person can be on top of it at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's reflected in the way stans engage with each other online, the way people drag other people's faves. And you see it in politics, the way people talk about the candidate that is not in the party that they belong to.
Mm-hmm.
The energy that you see at rallies is not all that different from the energy you see at a concert. I was in Iowa for the Iowa caucuses, and I was at the Ted Cruz site
mm-hmm.
When he won. And the excitement in that room was so palpable.
Mm-hmm.
People had on T-shirts. People were shouting. People were like, yes. And it was so similar to, you know, the energy that I saw when I was at a Chance the Rapper concert last month.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's not entirely that different. Like Rihanna stans and Beyonce stans can be friends, and mm-hmm. Trump voters and Clinton voters can be friends. I think at the end of the day, that's what it comes down to. It's like you have your fave, but having that fave does not keep you from interacting with other people.
Right.
True that. Okay, so if you could take like two or three political rock stars, comparing them to fandoms and their faves, What are some of your like ties to that?
All right. Well, Hillary Clinton is definitely similar to Taylor Swift.
Okay.
Just not only in sort of their fan bases, but also in the way, and this is not a bad thing, because I feel like when you use the word calculated with women, it's considered negative,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't have to be. But they are both very conscious of their image. They both very much have the path laid out that they want. Like, they are very upfront about it. And for better or worse, whether you like them or not, that is something. And they are successful because of that.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. they're capable of doing that.
Mm-hmm. Of, like, having that image that they can convince people to believe.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Okay. I would say, okay, Obama stans are very much like Kanye stans.
Okay, explain.
So you have to hear me out on this one. Like, they are both people who are heavily critiqued and oftentimes deserve that critique. But the people who stand for them have a certain protectiveness.
Mm-hmm.
I think also something about their fan bases are very Black and very male.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of with both of them in their fan bases, you sort of see this thing where they critique them on the inside. But if you are not within that in-group and you bring that critique in, they will be upset about it. They will say, hey, I think it's problematic that you're saying this. And it's warranted.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense for them to do. But it's very, their stans are very protective.
Very.
Very. Yeah. They go hard and they're extremely protective. I think Donald Trump is probably like most problematic faves.
Mm-hmm.
I think because he's very charismatic and a talented politician, actually. And in a way, you could also say like Chris Brown is very charismatic and talented.
Yeah.
But they keep on doing and saying things that upset people repeatedly.
Yeah.
Spot on.
And not learning anything.
Yeah. And sort of not really changing because of it. But their stans don't really care about that.
At all.
At all. Like they don't care. They will go hard. It's not happening.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's a perfect comparison there.
And I mean, if you think about it, Chris Brown has messed up so many times, but still makes so many hits.
Yeah.
And Donald Trump has had so many faux pas along this, but still gets good crowds, gets good numbers, and is able to excite a lot of people. And they're mm-hmm. similar in those aspects.
I'm blowing my mind with this.
I think the comparison of all comparisons is Michelle Obama and Beyoncé.
Yes.
Giselle 100%. Knows Carter. It's so interesting because they are both so untouchable. Critiquing Beyoncé and critiquing Michelle Obama will bring to you the same vitriol on the internet. Mm. Like, because everyone likes Beyoncé for the most part. She's talented. People love her concerts. And so many people like Michelle Obama. Donald Trump has talked about how much his wife Melania loves Michelle Obama. He's talked about the respect he's had for Michelle Obama, even though she occasionally attacks him in some campaigning that she's done for Hillary Clinton. They are untouchable. And what's so fascinating to me about the two of them being untouchable is the fact that they are Black women who arguably are sort of the least defended and protected people in this country, let alone the world.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, these two Black women are able to hold this power over people and are able to be just so well liked and so accepted by so many people in different walks of life
mm-hmm.
who they just have such amazing likability. It's wild to me often just to think about the fact that the two least controversial people to like in America right now
are black women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's interesting.
And I don't know how they did it. I mean, don't
we're all just here taking notes.
Teach me, girl. I want people to like me too. Maybe someday.
Maybe. Hopefully. But I'm sure people will love you. They already do.
Aww.
We love you.
I love you guys too.
All right. Thank you, JQ.
You're thanks
the
for having
best
me.
Ever. Can you tell everyone where they can find you on the internets and elsewhere?
Yes, I am on the internets. My Twitter handle is Jonquilin Hill, JonquilinHill. You can find the article. I have it pinned right now, so you can check it out there.
Yeah, and of course, we'll link her Twitter handle and the article in the description box.
Description
so
box.
Follow her, talk to her about fan fiction. Maybe she'll link you to her favorite B2K one, because you know you want some throwback fan fiction. But yeah, thank you so much, Jonquilin. You're the best.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
So we're going to talk a little more about fan fiction, but first we're going to talk about shipping, since it's what drives people to write fan fiction in the first place, mm-hmm. we think, at least.
Yeah.
So what was the first fan fiction you ever read?
So the first fanfic I was ever introduced to was actually by my neighbor, and it was a Draco and Hermione-based fanfic, and basically mm-hmm. they were like a couple, and if you guys don't know, those are two of the main characters in Harry Potter. And so honestly, I think that was the first couple I ever quote unquote shipped, mm-hmm. which, like, if people don't know, shipping, we explained in the first episode, but it's pretty much like when you are supportive of like a certain couple being together, and they could be a real life couple, a fictional couple, they can be actual people who are together, or they, you know, can be people who you just wish were together. And so basically fanfics are a great place for that to exist, because you can create this world in which either people who would never be together get together, like, I don't know, Rihanna and Mark Ruffalo, like, get together, and you can just write a universe where they're together. Or if you want to just create a universe of what you think Beyonce and Jay-Z are doing on the daily, you can do that. So I think it's really cool how, yeah, people can take shipping and create these universes in, you know, fanfics. And of course, like, not all fics are kind of sparked by a like shipping a couple. You can, of course, you'll have like Rihanna, you know, being written into a fan fiction where she's just a normal girl that goes to a high school and she just, it's a universe built around her. Mm-hmm. But I definitely do believe that a lot of the fan fiction I've come across, at least, is very deeply rooted in the whole idea of shipping. So yeah, it's very connected. But yeah, so what was your first fan fiction experience?
The first fan fiction I read, I came across it on Tumblr. I didn't even know what it was at first. I actually thought this was a true story until I got like halfway through it. But it was Rihanna and Chris Brown. And so it was back in the day, you know. But it was really old. It was like when I first got a Tumblr. And it was Rihanna and Chris Brown, and I remember reading it like, oh my God, when did this happen? I don't remember seeing anything about this. And so I obviously had no idea what fan fiction was. So, you know, as I read through the story, I'm like, there's no way this is real. So I kind of just clicked on the source of the story. Then I'm like, oh, so that's what it is. It's fan fiction, blah, blah, blah. So yeah, that was my introduction to fan fiction, really. Just me thinking that this was real at one point.
Right, which is hilarious. Because like for me, like my neighbor, because basically me and my neighbor, she's like my childhood friend, she and I were huge Harry Potter stans. So like this was even before, this was before all the books were even out,
right?
And so we were reading this on a website called fanfiction.net, which I believe is still one of the biggest fanfiction websites. And since then, like, so many more have come about, and I think people are using other ones a lot of the time, and they are posting original fanfics on Tumblr. There's like specific Tumblr accounts dedicated to submitting fanfics. So it's definitely spread. But yeah, I knew it was fanfiction because, first of all, it's on a place called fanfiction.net. Right. But it was also like, basically we were using it to like get us through the not hiatuses, but like in between when the books would be coming out, you know? So it was just an opportunity for it, kind of like what Jonquilin was saying, just kind of tying you over until you can get your next fix. And that sounds like a drug, I'm sorry, but that's how it be sometimes. But have you ever written fan fiction?
No, I'm not a writer. So maybe if I was a writer, a good writer, I maybe would have done it. Because there are some things where it's like, ooh, I would like to read a fic about this, but nobody has written about it yet.
See, that didn't stop me.
But did you? Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I don't think I'm a bad writer, but there are just so many talented fan fiction writers out there. And I don't think I'm really one of them. I just don't know if I'm a great fiction writer. But the weird thing about it is that this was 10 years ago. So I was 13 years old. And again, like back to what Jonquilin was saying, how a lot of fan fiction writers are teen girls. And I definitely fell into that category. I wrote my one and only fan fiction when I was 13. It was a Grey's Anatomy fanfic. Because I was on, and this was another thing, like most of the fan fiction I've always gravitated towards was about fictional, like actual fictional characters. So it was taken from TV shows, from films, from books, and fans who are creating their own universes based on that. So not as much like celebrities. But I was on this message board and I was reading a lot of fan fiction. And I also at this point was really obsessed with Shonda Rhimes. Like I loved everything about her. I would watch her interviews. She used to do a podcast where she would talk about the show. I was just like, I want to be her. And I also wanted her to notice me. So I was convinced that I would write this fan fiction and she'd be like, who is this amazing writer? I need to get this storyline on the show. Like, and would like pick me up and I'd be this teen prodigy writing on a like network show. Like that was literally in my mind at that point, which is ridiculous. But it was basically like, it was very tame. It was pretty much like, I don't know if you watch Grey's Anatomy or have watched it, but it was basically about like Isaiah Washington's character, Dr. Burke, at that point, he was in a relationship with Christina Yang. Mm-hmm. And this was before their relationship blew up. I'm sorry. I'm not doing spoiler alerts because this was 10 years ago.
Yeah, get over it.
So this was before their relationship blew up. But I pretty much wrote a storyline where he would have, like, a long-lost daughter, which is, like, of course, every crazy dramatic TV show, like, storyline. But he would have, a daughter show up and it would kind of, like, cause a crazy rift in their relationship and just kind of, like, how they moved on from that. But, you know, it didn't take me long to realize how much work it takes to build this universe and then, like, basically keep it going over a period of time, you know? Because there's, like, the one-shot fan fiction, which is just, like, literally just a short story. But then there's these fanfics that go on for years sometimes, you know, which is crazy and amazing. And I just have so much respect for all of those people who are able to pull that off.
Yeah, because, I mean, all of these people are, like, this is not their job to write fanfiction. Mm-hmm. So they have other things to do. They're students. They're, you know, they have a professional life, whatever. So it's like, even if I was a good writer or whatever, I don't think that I'd be able to do it because of how time consuming it is. You know, they dedicate a lot of their time to it, and when a story is really good, people are very demanding.
Oh yeah.
And they want their updates.
We've seen certain people who like write fan fiction and just how they're just berated by people who read it, like, why haven't you updated yet, when are you gonna update next, and all this stuff. And it's just like, you know, it's hard, like, keeping that up, because it's a lot of creative energy you have to put out. And if that's not, like, your sole job, it's, you know, you don't have the energy to do that all the time. But, you know, for some people, like, writing fanfics on the side as, like, a hobby does turn into, like, a lucrative career, as we've seen with, like, 50 Shades of Grey.
Oh, my God, yes.
Which was, like, a Twilight fanfiction. Do you want to take this one?
So 50 Shades of Grey started as Twilight fanfiction. And if you've seen the Twilight movies or read the Twilight books, it makes a whole lot of sense. I've read the first 50 Shades of Grey book when it first came out, and it was, I don't want to say it was horrible, but it was okay. Yeah. So it was all right. And after reading it, I'm like, okay, I get it. I understand why and how this could be
based off of
Bella and Edward. Yeah, because, like, Christian is super weird and emo and, like,
and,
you know,
what's her face,
brooding,
whatever her face is very, like,
yeah, what is her name, Anna or something? I don't even know.
It might as well be, but like Bella, she's very, like,
she's super weird.
Yeah, like I can only compare it to, like, a cat, you know?
Yes.
How, like, when you, like,
oh,
cats are
perfect.
Just very, like,
yeah,
they move really quickly when you come near them, and they, like, don't want to, like, she's just very, just so
she
awkward,
is she's
anyway.
Definitely like a cat. And so that is one of the ones that that was really popular. And
I remember like when 50 Shades of Grey got adapted into a book and then the films, especially when it got adapted into the books, because people were making such a huge deal, like, fan fiction had, like, a moment in mainstream, I think.
Yeah.
Because people were just like, oh, so this is a thing that's happening. And I do remember, like, Tumblr kind of, like, people were really excited about this, because, again, this is also, like, when Twilight fandom was still very much alive and going. Because it really signified to people that you had a chance, if you're out here writing fan fiction, you had a chance for your work to be taken seriously. No matter how you feel about 50 Shades of Grey, like, this was a woman who was doing this for fun, you know, or as a hobby, or, you know, just for an audience online. And it now has turned into this, you know, multi-million dollar, like, empire, basically. So I thought that was, like, a really, really cool time. So what was the other one?
And the other one is called After, and I'd never read it, but it's a One Direction story focused on Harry Styles. Mm-hmm. And it's a college AU, and it was written on, like,
so
Wattpad.
AU as in, like,
alternative universe. Yeah. So it has about, like, 200 chapters. It's really long, apparently. The people that I know that have read it, it's about Harry or whatever, and apparently he's kind of like abusive, and so many people love the story though, and it's like, it seems to me that it's not a very healthy relationship. Mm-hmm. And it's like, this is the same, it reminds me of 50 Shades of Grey, where it's like these like really taboo relationships are the ones that people seem to love the most, right, in fan fiction,
yeah,
and stuff like that.
It's where a lot of it lives, like with, there's abuse, and then like we mentioned earlier with the smut, like there's a lot of those themes in there with very drastic like sexual behavior that, mm-hmm, you know, isn't, I don't, like, it's just not what people, like, are used to seeing or reading about, I guess, you know, typically. Right. But, like, these are very heavy themes that you find in fan fiction. And also I find it, like, really interesting, and we'll get into this in a bit, I think. There's a lot of, like, queer relationships and characters in, and LGBT characters in fan fiction, mm-hmm, which I think is really interesting because it's, like, a space for them, for people to find representation and create these worlds, because they're not finding it like in a lot of mainstream novels or storylines or whatever. Yeah. So I find that really interesting too.
So yeah, that was like after 50 Shades of Grey, the fan fiction after got turned into a book, and apparently it's supposed to be being made into a film as well. Mm-hmm. So I'm interested to see it. I'm not going to read any of it.
Yeah.
But I'm interested to see it just to see what's the hype. Because apparently, like I said, it's an abusive relationship of some sort. So it's really weird that it's as popular as it is. But yeah, I mean, after 50 Shades of Grey came out, I think that, like you say, gave a lot of people hope. Mm-hmm. And they were like, well, maybe I could do this for a living, yeah, as well, and turning it to this huge empire. But yeah, I mean, it's very interesting. Mm-hmm. But when you mentioned, you know, finding an escape for, like, or finding representation for, you know, kids that feel like they're not represented on TV or whatever, it's interesting to me that, like, a lot of gay couples and stuff like that are written into stories, but it's like a lot of them are written by straight young teenagers. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm thinking about Larry, and Larry is a One Direction ship, Harry and Louie. Mm-hmm. And it's a bunch of, I mean, of course, there
so
are,
these are,
you know,
like bandmates for people who, yeah, really don't know One Direction.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
One, yeah, Direction, basically like shipping bandmates, like these bandmates with each other. And Larry,
yeah, and
is,
it's
like
extreme.
A hardcore.
I think it's the biggest like ship in pop, like
in
pop,
pop
music
culture,
at least.
In pop culture as a whole,
yeah,
I'm sure.
Biggest. Yeah. Like, you can search Larry on any social media site and you will find the craziest,
yeah,
things.
You will not find one man named Larry. It'll be all yes, it'll be all pictures of, yes, Harry and Louie. And I feel like we can delve into the origins of that like in a completely different episode, because it just, yeah, is, there's just so much there.
We could talk about Larry for hours, y'all.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
Yeah.
So yeah, like, it's, I've found that it's a lot of like straight girls that are writing these things, and I was always, I mean, I don't really know why, mm-hmm, but if somebody could maybe tweet me or something to just let me know, like, why are you so deep into it, and why do you believe like so deeply that these people are, you know, really together?
And do, like, and do you really believe, like, I always wonder, like, is it truly like blurring the lines between the fan fiction that's written and real life? Like, are, mm-hmm, you just doing it as like a sort of fandom role play type thing, or like are people truly taking like these bits that they've created and in this world and projecting it on them as in it's real?
Right. So those people are called like tin hats, I believe. Mm. And those are people that like truly believe the pairing is together in real life. And they come up with, like, usually tin hats come up with like crazy conspiracy theories that, you know, proves the couple is really, really together. Like, on April 3rd, this person wore a green shirt, and on April 5th, this person wore a wrinkly green shirt. So that means this person took this from the other person's dirty clothes hamper after two nights of rough sex. Like,
oh my God.
So, you know, it's like, it gets deep like that.
Yeah, and
it,
we have
really
to mention,
like,
it's not just the One Direction fandom.
No.
No. I mean, like, with the Fifth Harmony fandom, and of course people familiar with that will know of the ship Cameron, which is Camila Cabello and Lauren Jauregui. Mm-hmm. And honestly, like, I honestly think that a lot of the Larry shippers spilled over into the Cameron ship
most definitely.
World. And because you pretty much see that same behavior, and it's full of Tim
most
hats.
Definitely.
And so it's just really interesting because those are also, you know, both of those are very popular ships and, mm-hmm. and have a lot of like popular fan fiction and are most of the fan fiction that exists there in those spaces. And yeah, I think it's really interesting because, you know, shipping can definitely be healthy and, you know, especially even when you're expressing it through fan fiction. But yeah, when you start like projecting those things onto the real people, like it's gotten to the point where like Louis and Harry and Camilla and Lauren, they've all pretty much directly or indirectly have like spoken out about how these things make them uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the reasons why I've always gravitated towards fan fiction that's about fictional characters, because sometimes it just does get, it can get weird. Like, can you imagine if you like were scrolling through Tumblr and came across like an elaborate story about you?
No.
Like about you and like the personal things about your life and like describing your, you know, sex life and all those things. Like,
right.
I just,
so I mean,
you know,
I understand the discomfort, because I mean, Zayn Malik, he was the, you know, the member of the group that left One Direction, and he has a book coming out, I want to say in like a week or so, and he wrote about it briefly. He said, you know, these guys are like my brothers and we're on tour and all of these things, and I used to get online. He said he avoided stuff online because he'd get online and he'd see things about him and say Niall or Liam. And it's just like, it's so weird to read that about yourself. You know, it's so weird to read a story about you, like having sex with somebody you call your brother.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so, or like just being in like a fluffy relationship with someone. I'm sure it feels very weird.
Yeah, and the thing is, it doesn't stay in the online space.
Right.
Like, they're making T-shirts, they're making posters, they're screaming it out, you know, during concerts. And so it's
right.
like you can't get rid of it. And I feel like in that sense, like, when you do project that onto them, I think that is just a very, it's a dangerous space to be in, like, for everyone involved, I think.
My biggest issue with, like, shippers and stuff like that is that they don't keep it on, you know, Twitter or Tumblr or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you can discuss it amongst yourselves. You can even start a podcast and talk about
right.
it. But I think when it gets to a point where you bring it up to the actual artist, you go to a meet and greet and you have a shirt that says Cameron, when Cameron, you know, makes both people or maybe just one person in the ship uncomfortable, it's like, you know, well, you're not even being considerate of this person's feelings. You know
right.
what I mean? You
and
can ship Cameron as much as you want, but keep it to yourself, especially if you're going to be around this person.
Exactly. Because why make this interaction awkward?
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I think that's where it can definitely go too far. And I don't see that ending, really, because I feel like
mm-mm.
just there's more people writing fan fiction. There's more people. And again, like when people are on fan accounts talking about this stuff all day, it just becomes ingrained into like what you're doing. But yeah, I think fan fiction's great, but sometimes it's
there's
just too
like
far.
With everything, like, you know, with standing, there's always a line with every little thing. You know
yeah.
what I mean? Make sure you don't cross that line.
Yeah, I
you
feel
know?
Like that's a recurring theme now with this
We've
show.
Said this so many times,
but
like,
it's
you
true.
Have to
it
make
applies.
Sure you don't
in,
cross that line.
Yeah, it applies to like so many different spaces. So definitely.
Okay. So I have like a list of like the craziest type of types of fan fiction I've seen.
Oh my God! Yes, I want to hear it.
So the first one is when the character is like an inanimate object.
Oh my God.
For example, say like pizza, because that's the other person's favorite food. So say someone is writing a fan fiction about me, they write the person that they ship me with as some seafood pasta because I really love seafood pasta. And then like, it's usually a one shot, like usually fixed like this are one shots. They don't go into detail, of course,
mm-hmm.
but the whole thing is about me like eating this seafood pasta. It's like it has these like sexual undertones, and
I
it's
can't.
Like, ooh, she's slurping that pasta.
Ew.
So I've seen things like that. I've seen MPreg, and MPreg stands for male pregnant, a pregnant man. I thought that was really weird, and it had more to do with the fact that I've seen, along with the stories, I've seen, you know, fan art.
Oh, and God. Ooh, y'all, fan art is a whole nother story. Mm-hmm. Like, I have seen some things. I have seen some things, y'all. One Direction fandom, ooh wee. So, yeah, so I've seen, you know, like, pregnant. I've seen pictures of, like, pregnant Harry, pregnant Zayn, pregnant Liam, and so on and so forth. I've never liked the fics where people write themselves into a story.
So wait, in what way? Like when the author's actually writing themselves in, or like when they have that thing where it's like, it's literally the word
your name,
like, or your name, like that.
No, it's
that
the
phrase.
Ones where the author writes themselves into it.
Because the one where like it's like you're reading it and they pretty much are like personalizing it for you.
Yeah,
that
it feels
is
so.
Not, I mean, it's weird to me, but honestly, that's really creative. That's like
it
a really creative way to like express whatever and like to serve your readership.
I've tried to read one or two of those and I couldn't do it because every time I read your name, so like it'll say, and he kisses your name instead of saying, and he kisses Kayla or whatever. So
I
it's
think
just
what
really
you need,
weird.
What you would do is, and I'm not speaking from experience, but you would just copy the fic, put it in Word, and then just
and
replace
your,
the
okay.
word your name with your actual name.
Oh, okay.
I'm not saying I've done that before, but.
Listen. But yeah, so when people write themselves into a story, like, okay, so for example, on Twitter, I posted a thing that I saw on Tumblr. This girl I follow on Tumblr, she recently found out that a girl she used to date, talk to, whatever, she writes Ninja Turtle fan fiction. Fine, you know, you're kind of weirded out by that, but whatever, because you're like an adult and you're writing fan fiction for a cartoon that doesn't even come on anymore. That's fine, you know, whatever floats your boat. The worst part was the fact that she wrote herself into the story and she like fucked Michelangelo or something like that. And that was she. And so the girl that I follow on Tumblr, she was like super weirded out by it. She was like, I can't believe that this girl wrote herself into the story. I was already weirded out by the fact that she wrote Ninja Turtle fan fiction in the first place. But she made her, I mean, you know, this is a turtle, you know, like at the end of the day, this is a turtle. So yeah, those are weird, kind of weird.
God,
you know, it depends on what the characters are, you know.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, whatever floats your boat. Like,
yeah,
the great thing about fan fiction is
that's kind of, you know,
literally
bestiality.
Whatever you want it to be. And if that's what you're into, I won't go to that part of the internet. But
if you're into turtle sex,
do
you know,
you
do it, I guess. And then a couple more. I've read about 3 or 4 full stories, like follow them with the updates and stuff like that. I haven't read that many, but all of them have been written by somebody who is older or is a person of color. Mm-hmm. And I had, when I was like heavy into reading fan fiction, I had found, I want to say like 2 Tumblrs. It's not that many out there, but 2 Tumblrs where they kind of made a archive of fics written by people of color, usually black girls.
Ooh.
And stuff like that. I wish I remember the websites. It was a couple years ago.
We gotta
but
find it and see. I'm sure there's a space for that now.
Yeah, so it was the few fics that I have written, I've read from older people or just people that, you know, could that write things that I can relate to in a story, like say my favorite character tying up her hair. It's the small details like that. So yeah, but other than that, I mean, fan fiction is cool.
Yeah,
you
know. Send us some of your favorite fan fiction, or like link us to your favorite fanfic authors. We'd love to like check them out and show them some support.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah,
write me into your stories.
If you write me into your stories, don't make it my actual government name, please.
Write us into your story as like these really two girls, cool girls that have a podcast.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Don't use our real names though.
Yeah.
So we're going to get into flops and faves, and if you haven't been here before, if this is your first time, it is our favorite thing of the week and our least favorite thing of the week.
Yep.
So you want to go first?
Yes, I will. So my fave is a TV show.
Okay.
It's Black Mirror, which just the third season just premiered on Netflix.
Yes.
I actually had never watched this show before.
Same.
But basically it's like an anthology series. So each episode is kind of its own short film. So you don't really need to watch the first 2 seasons. So I started with season 3. And boy, like I binge watched this series in just a few days, mm-hmm. and it is a psychological trip. Like, is that's it? The only oh way I can describe it. Like, it truly, like, each and every episode leaves you feeling, like, just thinking about so many big ideas and themes and really scaring you to death. And this season, like, you know, I watched one episode in a previous season, but, like, I can speak to this season. And, like, all the episodes, basically, the overarching theme is how technology can come back to bite us in the ass. Yes. Like, and some of them are just way too relatable, like how social media, how we're so obsessed with people rating us or people liking our pictures and how that can drive us crazy, or mm-hmm. just how hackers can get into our stuff and pretty much convince us to do anything by holding Google searches or whatever that we've done, you know, as blackmail, like all kinds of crazy stuff. I won't spoil it. I think my favorite episode is San Junipero.
Oh, I loved it. It was so good.
I love Gugu Mbatha-Raw. She stars in the episode, and I cannot remember the other actress's name, but she is amazing. Yeah. And it's actually the only episode that has like an ending truly loved.
Yeah.
and like side note, like the whole series has a pretty great playlist, like mm-hmm. yes. music they use. And actually I tweeted out the music that was used. There's a Spotify playlist for the San Junipero episode, which was particularly mm-hmm. really great. And so you guys, I'll definitely link to that, but please go watch Black Mirror. Season 3 was top to bottom just so great. I'm gonna rewatch it. It's one of those shows that truly leaves you with like a message. So yeah, go watch.
I do recommend
Black
Mirror. The first two seasons though.
Yeah,
The Christmas special. So I watched everything.
Okay.
Well, no, I have one more episode left. The very last episode of the third season.
Uh huh.
But y'all, okay, you too. You have to
watch. I will.
You have to go watch.
Well, the only reason I didn't is because I needed time to like recover from the third season.
Yes.
You know, and so I needed to give myself a moment. So I'm going to go back and watch the first two seasons. And the seasons are actually really short.
Yeah. So it doesn't take a long time at all.
Yeah. There's only like 6 episodes in the third season. I think there's like 3 or 4 in the first. So it's very, very short seasons. But yeah, go watch that. And
what's your flop?
So you know, like I went back and forth with what my flop was gonna be because mm-hmm. I didn't really realize it until I sat down that I had quite a lot of flops in the past week. but the most recent one is Soulja Boy.
Oh God!
Because he's just on Twitter, just like it's an obvious cry for attention, and I'm sad I'm giving it to him on this platform. but like he pretty much released a diss track to Lil Yachty, who's probably like 10 years younger than him.
Yes.
And just I need to listen to the song. I couldn't bring myself to even listen to it, but I just saw the tweet and the cover art of the diss track. So first of all, he says like, oh, coming out tonight, like the diss track with Lil, you know, my diss at Lil Yachty, listen to. I'm like, who calls their diss track a diss track?
Nobody.
Like, do people actually call their... No one has ever done that. And then even on the cover art, it says Lil Yachty diss. Like, I'm pretty sure that's the name of the song. And, like,
that's
in
ridiculous.
The cover art, the... Like, there's a boat broken in half. And I'm just like, really? Like, you didn't have to do this. And then there was something else he tweeted. And I'm seeing all of this because he keeps getting retweeted onto my timeline.
Yeah.
So, like,
nobody follows
just
Soulja
full
Boy.
Disclosure. But... He also like tweeted a screenshot of like a series of DMs with Keke Palmer, and honestly it just proved to me the kind of man that Soulja Boy is, which I've encountered many times. That dude that like will double message you like, hey, what's up, what you do, like, and will not get the message that you just don't want to talk. And she actually responded to a couple and was like nice and cordial.
Yeah.
But so like it didn't even make any sense because it's not like he was exposing her by posting this screenshot. Like it
at
literally
all.
Was making him look worse.
Right.
But basically I think she tweeted like a bunch of votes, and so I guess mm-hmm. he saw that in support of Lil Yachty and he got mad. He's like, tweet one more boat emoji. Like, and I'm just like, Soulja Boy, what are you gonna do? Like,
nothing.
What are you gonna do if she tweets one more boat emoji? Like, shoot, I'm gonna, like, I'm gonna get off of this podcast now and, like, tweet a bunch of boat emojis in spite, just to spite him, you know, because I can't. So, yeah, he's my flop of the week because we're over him. Like, I love Beyonce for using, you know, a little bit of his song and Hold Up. Like, I think that was her burying him, to be honest. She's like, I'm just going to take this and we're just going to shut the casket now.
So,
let's just listen to Beyonce as always and not, we can move on. So, yeah. Anyways, that's my flop of the week. So, what were your flops and faves this week?
My fave of the week is Emily Sunday's song Breathing Underwater. She recently put it out, I want to say, last Friday. And I've been listening to it all week. And it's really good. And honestly, I love any song that includes a choir breakdown.
Oh my God, it has one
at the end of the song. So, and I've been really excited to hear new music from her. She's released about 3 or 4 songs from her album that will be out on November 11th called Long Live the Angels. So yeah, check it out. The few songs that she put out, she has a song with Jay Electronica. And yeah, so it's a really good song. I enjoy it a lot. Tell me what you think about it. Yeah, her voice is so amazing. Sing, yes.
But yeah, she's great. She's really great.
So yeah, go listen to her new music, especially Breathing Underwater. It's really good. Okay, so my flop of the week goes to Drake fans.
I'm gonna be
specific. Okay, this is like super specific, okay. But this is Drake fans that are fans of pop star Drake.
Okay,
and my flop of the week goes to them because they often they try to go toe to toe with hip hop fans on Twitter. So Drake put out a few songs on OVO Sound Radio like a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, and he kind of responded to Kid Cudi. You know, people were upset about that. And he responded to Pusha T, who's a rapper from a group called The Clips. So, yeah, so Pusha T came at Drake once before, two times. He's come at Drake quite a few times, I think. And so Drake responded to him. Now, if you know rap like I do, you know that Pusha T is a better rapper than Drake. It's just fact. But I see a lot of like pop star Drake fans try to put into the argument that, well, Drake sells millions, so he's a better rapper. That's not how it works.
Right. Not
you cannot apply pop stan Twitter rules to hip hop stan Twitter rules.
Preach.
So some boy, he put out a video like kind of like reading Drake, and he's like, Drake never responds to what the person, you know, made claims about, you know, for him. So Meek Mill made the accusation that Drake does not write any of his rhymes. Drake came back and talked about him being on Nicki Minaj's tour, which was actually a really good diss song. Back to back is definitely a good diss track, but it's like, it's the fact that we still don't know if Drake even wrote it. You know what I mean? So it's like things like that where it's like people are dissing him and coming at him with like valid disses, and he comes back and like insults your mama or something. And it's like,
That's true.
And it's like when it comes to having that argument, because you know, hip hop arguments, they run deep. You know what I mean? But I just think that it's crazy that they think because he sells millions, he's a better rapper. It's like, and that's not the case at all, because I'm more than sure a lot of rappers can wrap circles around him. He's just a really great...
He has a great brand.
Yeah, he has a great brand, you know. Kid Fury said something like, he's like the rap Taylor Swift, but not insufferable. And
That's great.
And yeah, so, you know, and somebody was like, not yet. But so, you know, we'll see how Drake, you know, how we react to Drake in maybe a year or so. But yeah, it's like, I just don't like how his fans think because he sells so much, you know, music and does these huge tours, whatever, that he's a better rapper because of that. So my flop goes to those people that think they can kind of like, because hip hop stan Twitter and pop stan Twitter are two very different things. And, you know, trying to fuse the two like Drake has done, because he does put out, you know, like, I don't want to say real rap because rap is rap, period. But, you know, lyrical rap, and then like the rap that just kind of like, that gets played to the masses that your mom will listen to or something like that. So yeah, I mean, you know, I just wish people would kind of like respect rap a little bit more, rap hierarchy a little bit more, because
I don't like how it's looking. I don't like how, I don't want it to become pop stan Twitter. I don't want people to think that someone is better because of their numbers, because that's not how it works. Mm-hmm. You know? So yeah, man. That's my flop and fave of the week.
Sorry, Drake stans. Yeah. That are using pop logic. It's very specific.
Yes, yeah, it's specific, you know, because I mean, I'm a fan of older Drake. You know, I'm not a huge fan of Views and stuff like that, but I definitely am a fan of older Drake. So yeah. I'd be dissing myself.
Right.
So yeah. It's not everyone.
Yeah, we still love y'all.
So shout out to Dion. She produces all the music you hear in the beginning of and the end of the episode. You can follow her on Twitter and SoundCloud at Your Girl DJ Magic. You can follow our personal Twitters. Our names will be in the description box. You can follow the show on Twitter at The Fan Podcast.
Yep. We love y'all. Thank you again for listening.
Thank you. Thank
if you're listening to this before November 8th, I really hope you registered to vote and you will go out to vote.
Go vote,
goddammit. I'm not telling you who to vote for because I can't do that.
No.
Because of my J-O-B. But, you know, if you're not old enough to vote, but maybe you have a car, maybe help people get to the polls, you know, like that kind of thing. But, yeah.
Go vote, y'all.
We'll see y'all on the other side.
Wow.
I'm sorry, that was really dramatic. But this is a serious election, I'm not kidding.
Yes, please.